Hey team, welcome back to the show. Today it is Coach Andrea and I once again with part two of the Female Body Recomposition Blueprint. And today we're going to be talking about foundational principles for a healthy, responsive body. Basically, how do we optimize things like your hormones, thyroid, and more? Basically, how do we get your body in the best place to recomp? I really think this is an overlooked aspect of recomposition. Really something that we really prioritize within our own coaching service and a big part of why our clients get such good results. So again, I think it's so important to touch on. Everybody wants to just like hop right into a fat loss phase, hop right into a calorie deficit without making sure that, again, they're really set up for success. So again, really going to cover in this episode how women can establish a great foundation and again, build the healthiest, most responsive body. Anything else you want to add to that before we hop in?
This is something that, like you said, we prioritize really heavily. And it's something that once we started to dive into this more and have people go through health phases where necessary, it removed a lot of the frustration that would happen in fat loss phases. And, you know, we'll have people get started where they're like, I've been trying to diet for this long, I'm at this low calorie intake. I've also gotten these labs and see like all of this stuff is off. So can we get started and get into a fat loss phase? And, you know, whenever we weren't looking at lab work and things like that, it would be more like, okay, this person has a fat loss goal. Let's get into it. And we might have a primer week to like find their calories. But beyond that, if we just dove right into a fat loss phase, a lot of times, I mean, most of the time it's still going to go great, but there are times where it is like, oh, I don't understand what's going on here. Why are we pulling calories and nothing is happening? And so, this has been like a really big game changer for, understanding those type of clients and knowing exactly how to get them the best results. And anytime when it's necessary, we make sure and have a longer health or primer phase to fix this before going into fat loss. It just goes so much smoother. And I know that's never something that a fat loss focused client wants to hear, is that we need to spend 3-6 months fixing this other stuff before we get into it. But it's always a way smoother process when we do that.
Absolutely. And so much of coaching is, again, about getting people to play the long game, right? Because typically someone who struggled to achieve what they want has been very much focused on the short term, which again is almost always counter to what will ultimately allow you to build the best physique. And this isn't necessarily as well, like with it, within what we're talking about here. No matter what, we're going to want to make sure a client is in a good place with all these markers, but it doesn't necessarily mean like, hey, you're going to do a 3-6 month primer phase. It might be like, hey, in this like phase, we're seeing some body recomposition and we're focusing on improving these things at the same time. But no matter what, we're going to make sure all these variables are in a good place. So let's get into what is a healthy, responsive body, which I also, I'm pretty sure Brandon Cruz has healthy bodies or responsive body trademarked. So credit to you, Brandon. But from there, what is a healthy, responsive body? So first, let's talk through optimal sex hormones, which again is going to be a very important variable here. Andrea, talk us through like first, why does this matter when we're talking about sex hormones? Why does this matter?
Yeah, well, like you just said, a body that is in optimal health is going to respond to any changes we're making, whether it's a calorie deficit or getting into a build phase. We have to have these foundational things in a good place in order to get the best results. Because whenever you have low sex hormones or sex hormones that aren't in the ranges that they should be for optimal health, then whichever goal you have, you're going to basically be swimming upstream. It's not that you won't see any change in your body at all, but things are going to be so much grindier, so much more difficult. And so if we can get this in a good place first, then things just click so much better. So when your hormones are in a more optimal place, you are going to have better hunger signals, and that can be in either direction. If you are never hungry, that can be an issue. If you're, if you feel like you're hungry all the time and you're just like a bottomless pit, that can be an issue. And so, fixing your sex hormones, getting those into a good place can regulate those. You will sleep better, which means you're going to have better recovery. And then your capacity to burn fat or build muscle is going to be in a better place too. When your energy is good, as a response to having healthy sex hormones, then you're going to train better. You're going to be moving more throughout the day. So your non-exercise activity tends to be higher and you just feel better overall. And if you feel better, then you're going to be more likely to follow through in whichever phase you're in.
Absolutely. It does make such a huge difference when like we're working with someone and like testosterone is low and we get it in a better place. Not only like their ability to add muscle, but also just like how they feel, their motivation throughout the day and things of that nature. So speaking of that, like what are, when we're talking about sex hormones, what are the primary sex hormones we're looking at?
We would be looking at estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And so these are present in everybody, male and female, but the primary things that we're going to be looking at in males is just going to be testosterone. And then females, it'll be all three. Obviously the ranges that we're looking at are going to be different, but if we have those in an optimal spot, regardless of who it is, then like I said, they're going to feel better and respond better in any phase.
Absolutely. But again, they are important for both men and women. I think like a lot of times it's thought that like estrogen is the female hormone, whereas testosterone is very, very important and it's oftentimes low in women. Or like on the flip side, honestly, this is the first time I've seen this, but I had a male client get his labs done and he came back like his testosterone was low, but his estrogen was super low. And men will feel like shit if their estrogen is too low as well, right? It's such an important part of. And it's important for health, but also in things like your libido. And it's a very important, like, again, like the balance of the two will be different, but estrogen and testosterone are both going to be important. The low progesterone is very common as well. So from there, walk us through then like biofeedback signals or really like any signals from your body when we're looking at these sex hormones, any signals your body could be sending that, hey, these might not be in a good place, because I imagine a lot of people like haven't gotten labs done. So what would be some signs that these things might not be in a good place?
Yeah. So for women, your period is a big like health marker for you. So if you have really bad PMS or you have, it's normal to have some sort of like fluctuation in the scale weight or just like a little bit of cramping with ovulation as well. But if you have major symptoms around ovulation too, that can be a sign. Really heavy or really painful periods is a good sign that something is off. Excessive bloating, which some bloating is normal for sure. But if it's like excessive and like really uncomfortable, then that's a good sign that something's off there. Poor sleep, anxiety, low moods, lack of patience, poor energy levels, low sex drive or motivation, poor recovery. Those are all signs that things are off. So what we'll usually see in, so anytime we're looking at labs, most often it's because of symptoms or just we're not seeing the response in somebody's body that we'd expect. And most of the people that we're working with are going to be like more driven, like hardworking people, and they will err on the side of higher stress. And what that often results in is low progesterone and a lot of times low testosterone as well. So estrogen and progesterone are meant to be within a certain ratio. And so even if progesterone is low and estrogen is normal, you're technically going to be relatively estrogen dominant. And anytime estrogen is high in relation to progesterone, then you get symptoms. And so that's in, progesterone is your calming hormone. So that's where you would see like digestion could be off or your mood is off. You're crankier, less patient with your kids or your spouse, or you're not sleeping well. And anxiety is a big thing with that too. And then testosterone is going to be more of those like sex hormone or sex drive is low, motivation is low, you're not building muscle or you're not recovering well, that can have an impact on sleep and anxiety too. But those are the typical signs that we'll see.
Okay. So then let's talk through, and of course, this is going to be very specific to the individual. There's a lot like within your lifestyle, what are your specific stressors? Like, where does supplementation make sense? And again, like we can't get quite as specific, but let's talk through, like, I think it's also easy if it's like, okay, I identify with a lot of those things, so my hormones are the issue. It's also important to understand that lifestyle is probably the driver, right? Or to a large degree, lifestyle is the driver. So talk us through, like, what are some general things that we would focus on with a client to improve if it seems like this is an issue?
Yeah. And these are things that we would want to focus on anyway. And so just doing these things are going to help improve where your hormones are, even if you never even get labs and look at them. When it's something that's more severe and we have looked at labs, it's probably just a matter of spending more time focusing on just this before we go into a phase of dieting or building. But so first one is a higher micronutrient density diet. So we want to make sure that everything is covered there. I know we're going to get into micros in a little bit, so I won't get like super specific on those, but you want to make sure that you don't have any big gaping holes in your micronutrient intake. So even like just taking a multivitamin can help quite a bit. We obviously want to cover it with the diet, but even paying very close attention to the different nutrients that you're getting in daily, it's really hard to cover everything that you need. Right. And so a pretty like simple but high quality multivitamin can be really helpful there too, just to cover your bases like an insurance policy. Recovery from training. So we don't want to overtrain. We want to make sure that we're training enough to get the stimulus that we need, but then not training so much that we can't recover from it. So we've talked about like the stimulus recovery adaptation curve. If you don't want to be digging a bigger hole than you can get yourself out of and recover and adapt. Reducing stress. So there's the allostatic load concept where all the stressors in your life from every single area. So like relationship stress, stress from having kids, stress from being busy with work, stress from training, from not sleeping, like all of those things are, they're not independent of one another. It all goes in one big stress bucket. And so if you can reduce stress from any area or reduce stress a little bit from all areas across the board, that's going to reduce that allostatic load. So you're not overfilling that stress bucket. And when that stress bucket overflows, that's when you end up getting more symptoms. Eating enough carbs and fats. So both, obviously protein, like everybody knows if they're listening to this show that the protein is going to be important for their physique goals, but we want to make sure that you're getting adequate carbs and fats too, because they each play an important role in making sure your hormones are where they should be. And then not dieting too aggressively or too often, or aggressively for too long, or dieting too often without a longer break in between. Absolutely. Do you have more to add there?
No, I think that was a very good summary. And again, like in the next few episodes, we're also going to talk about a little bit more with the training nutrition side of things like training volume, micros to focus on. But I think that's a good high level summary. And again, like the biggest mistakes most people are making. So again, if you're someone where it's like, wow, I really resonate with the above, like, again, a lot of those symptoms you described where I think like my hormonally, I might not be in a good place. Also have to realize that probably part of that entails fixing things that Andrea just listed off, which I think is harder to, it's easy to like, this is an issue. But again, like to want to fix those things is also a very important variable here. So let's get into thyroid. First, when we're talking about an optimal thyroid, can you first talk us through like, what are we looking at here? Like, what are the markers as far as like T4, et cetera?
Yeah. So the different markers for looking at thyroid are going to be T4, T3, reverse T3, TSH, and TSH. And sometimes we'll also look at TPOAP. So most of the time, whenever you just get a standard lab panel, it'll have TSH on there, but not the remaining numbers. So you kind of have to request those and like directly specifically ask for those if you want to see them. TSH is your thyroid signaling hormone. So typically the reason that they will only look at that one is if the others are off, theoretically it should show up as thyroid stimulating hormone being off, but that's not always the case. We can see TSH being normal, but then T4 being low, or T4 being normal, but instead of converting to T3, which is the active thyroid hormone, it converts to reverse T3, which is inactive because of high stress. So we'll look at those to see, to just make sure that everything looks good there. And thyroid is something that people think of in relation to like my metabolism, making sure that my metabolism is fast enough and I'm able to lose weight. But really every cell in your body has thyroid receptor hormone. So it really plays a big role, not only in your metabolic rate and being able to lose body fat, but also recovery, building muscle, and then energy through the day. And so if your thyroid hormone isn't where it should be optimally, then you'll have the symptoms of not building muscle, not recovering well, not being able to lose fat as quickly or efficiently as you think that you should be at that intake.
Absolutely. And again, like this is, I think that again, people just think of it as fat loss, but again, it impacts so many different areas. As you said, like every cell in your body has a receptor for thyroid hormone. So from a biofeedback perspective, or any other signs your body might be sending you, like what do you typically see from someone with thyroid issues?
Yeah,
or I think maybe you're not necessarily issues, but maybe you're not supporting it well enough. Maybe it's not in an optimal place.
These are really helpful to consider, because just not losing weight can be so many other things. And most often it's not thyroid. Most often it is. We're actually like tracking the days that look really good, but then leaving days out of your tracker that don't look perfect. And maybe we're eating out more often than we think, or all of those other things.
I think that's important, because we definitely want to, like, I think listening to this, it's easy to like, oh, that's me. And that's me too. And like, definitely the intention here isn't like fear mongering or like to play any of these things in your brain. And again, understanding that even if you do have these issues, a lot of times it is just like, it's not like something magical with supplementation. It is lifestyle changes and nutrition changes. But again, it's much, much more common that these things aren't issues than they are. So that's important to address as well. But I'm sorry, go on.
No, that's good. Other symptoms that you'll notice would be feeling really cold all the time. So like if you're toes and fingers are always cold, or like everybody else in the house is perfectly fine, but you're like in a hat and hoodie and snuggled up under a blanket and still cold. That's a really good sign. If you're always tired, you're sleeping well, but you're always tired, poor recovery, really brittle hair and nails, like you're brushing your hair and there's like clumps of hair coming out. Or you just have to keep your calories. You're tracking consistently everything with your calories, measuring and everything, and not eating out more than you're accounting for. And you're having to keep your calorie count really low in order to maintain your weight.
Okay. So what would we generally focus on to improve this?
So the first big one is micronutrient density. The major players for your thyroid are going to be zinc, iodine, and selenium. So you want to make sure that you are getting enough of those. One easy way of doing this is using Chronometer, which is a tracking app, and plug all of your food into Chronometer and look at where your zinc, selenium, and iodine are. Not dieting too frequently. So I had said that before. Yes. I said that before with sex hormones as well. So this is a big one. Your body doesn't love being in a deficit, or like trying to be in a deficit all the time year round. So this is why we're always talking about getting in, being like serious about your fat loss phase, being like maybe considering following a meal plan or following your own sort of like meal template, not having a ton of variation so that you can get in and get it done so you can get back out and live at maintenance or building. Because if you're trying to diet all the time, then metabolic adaptation is a completely normal response to being in a fat loss phase. And so if you're extending that out for a really long period of time, one of the ways that your body adapts is converting your thyroid hormone to reverse T3 that's not active. And so you'll get hypothyroid symptoms from that. And then carbs. So your thyroid functions best on a higher carb diet. I wish I could remember the exact study, but maybe you'll remember it. But there was a study with keto diets and how big of an impact that had on thyroid health. Do you remember any of the specifics on that?
I don't. I know.
Okay. You might have to look it up and report on it later. But basically your carbohydrates are important for thyroid function. And so always being in a low carb diet can have a negative impact on your thyroid hormone. And then again, reducing stress. And all of these other things are stressors on your body too. So not getting in your micros, dieting too frequently, fasting, or like overtraining, those are all things that go into that allostatic load. And that has a negative impact on your thyroid too.
Okay. Okay. Incredible. Okay. So I think that's a super good summary of thyroid. Again, when we're talking about just creating the healthiest, most responsive body, what other biofeedback would we want to focus on? Like, hey, this is important and potentially improving.
So stress is obviously a big one. We talked about that one a couple of times, so probably don't need to continue on that one. Sleep is another big one. And so with sleep, people who are sleeping better get better results. So they build more muscle and they burn more body fat. There's a study we've referenced quite a few times where people sleeping 6 hours versus 8 hours, the people who slept 8 hours in a deficit lost more body fat, but the same amount of weight. So that means the people who are sleeping 6 hours, they lost that weight, but it came from muscle mass, which isn't obviously the goal here. Deep sleep is when growth hormone is released. And so that has obviously a big impact on the amount of muscle that we're able to build. And that's when we are recovering and repairing. So muscle growth, but also repairing tendons and ligaments. And so like overuse injuries are going to be way more common if you're not getting good sleep. And if you already have like an existing injury, that's just going to take longer to recover and repair if you aren't getting good deep sleep. Alcohol, caffeine, stress, blue light, those are things that are going to reduce the quality of your sleep. So a lot of people will be drinking caffeine throughout the day and they'll say like, well, it's fine because I just fall asleep right as soon as my head hits the pillow. But if you were to look at your deep sleep, your REM sleep, it's not going to be as quality. Like you might be laying there technically sleeping, but you're in more of that light sleep phase when you've had too much caffeine. And same goes with alcohol. Like you can have a glass of wine and maybe it makes you feel like you're falling asleep easier, but you're still not getting that deep restorative sleep that you need. And then blue light is more going to reduce the quantity of your sleep. Like it's just harder to fall asleep if you've been watching TV or scrolling on your phone right before that. I can also say like anytime I've watched something even remotely stressful, I'm not going to sleep as well and I will have dreams. So like paying attention to the things that you're watching or reading even can be important too, because I don't know. Do you get that? Do you like stress? Oh, yeah. Dream?
Oh yeah. No, I constantly do. I am constantly have dreams that I'm answering emails when it'll be like earlier in the morning when I'm like starting to like fade, like drift in and out of sleep. It'll be like I'm answering an email. Katie yeah. says that like in the night, like I sleep talk and she'll be like, you literally are like on calls, like on calls with like the team or like potential clients just like talking like that. So yeah, they definitely do.
Is that from reading emails before bed?
No, I guess that's just,
okay. Just from
when
the
it
day.
Comes to like, but yes, also like we were watching this show, like Midnight Mass. It was like, this has been like a couple years ago now, I think, but it was like about, it's like a vampire or something like that. But it was a scary show. I'm not going to lie. My tolerance for that is very low, but similarly, like if I watch anything like that, it's like, I have so many dreams about it and it's just like, I like can't sleep. So I can't watch like anything that's like horror related, honestly, but especially like before bed, because yeah, it's exactly like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
So how do we improve when we're talking about sleep?
So then obviously one of the big ones is not watching shows before bed or reading anything stressful. Definitely don't be watching the news and then trying to go to sleep, because you're going to lay there and spin. Having a sleep routine can help you get out of that mindset. So one of the ones that I like recommending is a brain dump journal. You just write out everything on your mind. And that helps you, because if you've ever laid there like spinning thoughts, a lot of times it's because you don't want to forget that thing and you want to wake up and remember that so that you can write it down or do it. So if you just write out everything that's on your brain before you lay down, that can really help, because then you don't have to think about it and it's easier to fall asleep, because then you'll remember it in the morning. Lowering your stress. So that one is obviously way easier said than done, but finding ways that you can reduce your overall stress load mean that you're going to be able to get into a parasympathetic state, which makes it easier to fall asleep. So parasympathetic is your rest and digest. Sympathetic is fight or flight. So you need to go from, if you're in a fight or flight state, you need to go from that state to parasympathetic rest or digest in order to be able to fall asleep. And that journaling can be part of that. Reduce your caffeine intake overall. So the number specifically is going to be a little bit different for most people, for different people, but I would say for most people, 300 is kind of a good cap. Would you say?
Yeah, I think 200 to 300 is pretty realistic cap for most people, depending on how sensitive to it you are, how quickly you metabolize.
Yeah.
If you don't drink a lot of caffeine, that might be a ton, but
yeah.
Most, there aren't very many people who don't drink a lot of caffeine. So,
right. Yeah. But just if you're not sleeping great, then wherever you're at now, reduce that by half and try and work it down from there if you need to. It's just so all over the board with where people are that it's hard to give an exact number there, but that's, most people probably need to reduce. And then I would also cut that off at least 12 hours before bedtime. Or well, that actually, that's pretty aggressive. Some people say before noon, but I know for me, if I had caffeine anywhere close to noon, I would not be sleeping, but I also go to bed really early. 12 hours is probably good for most people that aren't going to bed at 8 like I do.
I really think noon seems to be a good cutoff, like general cutoff for most people who go to bed around like 9:30 to 10:30. I would say somewhere between 10 to 12 hours. I wouldn't, definitely don't push past 10 hours, because I don't think people realize like how long the half-life of caffeine actually is. And it can be very, very variable. But for most people, like past that, we definitely start to see it impacting sleep. And I honestly think even with like 10 hours, people often don't realize like how much it still is impacting your sleep, where it might be like, I'm tired, I'm able to fall asleep, but maybe you like wake up more in the night to pee. Right. And even that, I think people often realize like when you're in deep sleep, your body will release more antidiuretic hormones. So like if you're waking up in the night a lot to pee, good sign that, hey, we're not in a deep state of sleep. And I think even like little things like that are often missed. I think another important variable here is digestion. Would you agree?
Yes. Yeah, okay. For sure.
So what are like, why is that important? And what are we looking to improve there?
Yeah. So if your digestion isn't in a good place, then that's a good sign that you're not digesting and assimilating the food that you're taking in. And we want that, like we're eating that food to do a job. Like obviously there's a lot more to food in terms of the connection and emotion and all that stuff. But in this sense of it, we're eating carbohydrates because we want to use those as fuel in our training session, or we want to store that as muscle glycogen, where if you're not digesting and assimilating that well, then it's not going to do the job that you're wanting it to do. And so if you are having excessive gas or bloat, or you're having frequent constipation or diarrhea, that's a really good sign that your digestion is not where it should be in order to use that food for what it's supposed to be doing. So with good digestion, there are a lot of nuances with it, but 90%+ of people, if they dial in the basics, they're going to clear up their digestion. And that's going to be the right amount of fiber. So the right amount can be different for different people. Like my tolerance is like on the lower side of the range. Some people can tolerate on a much higher end of the range, but usually 10 to 13 grams for every 1000 calories you're consuming is a good place to start. And then you can adjust up or down from there. You also want a good mix of soluble and insoluble fiber. So soluble fiber is going to bulk your stool, and insoluble fiber is going to move your stool through your GI. So if you skew towards too much soluble fiber, then you might have more constipation and bloat. And if you skew too much towards insoluble fiber, then you might have too much like loose stool or diarrhea. So we want a good blend of the two. And if you're experiencing digestion on either end of that spectrum, then you might look at where your fiber sources are coming from. I would say with my clients, the thing that I see way more often than the other is constipation. And so that just means we need to add more of like the hard stemmy veggies, more broccoli, kale, cauliflower, those kind of things are going to have more of that indigestible fiber. Soluble fiber is like, think if you put this in water, does it absorb and get kind of like gummy, or does it not take on that water? That's kind of how I like to think about it. Like chia seeds or berries, if you put those in water, or oats, they're going to expand and get kind of like jelly. Whereas if you put broccoli in water, nothing happens. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. I think that's a good way to break it down. So like from the digestion front, anything else you'd want to add there?
Yeah, water. If you are not drinking enough water, then the fiber is not going to do its job. So we want to make sure to get at least 100 ounces of water is like a good standard that I'll give. Obviously, if you're like a heavy sweater, you might want a little bit more than that. And then spacing between your meals and even distribution of protein. That's another thing that a lot of people miss with good digestion. Eating mostly whole foods. So if you're eating a lot of fiber added products, those really tend to mess with people's gut. Those are the big rocks that I'll give with digestion. And that clears up like almost everybody's digestion.
Oh yeah. And the water is such a common issue. I think people underestimate how important that is. And very few people are actually drinking enough water as well. Where it's so common, like someone will be constipated and it's like, hey, I think I'm eating more protein. And it's like almost always like food, not the protein is a problem, mm-hmm. but like we're not eating enough fiber or we're not getting enough water. From there might not even be like in this biofeedback or like internal health, but any other important factors as we wrap this up that you would want to bring up here?
Yeah, the biggest other things here, one that I don't think many people think of is mindset. And this could be a very big topic. And obviously we've done entire podcasts on this, but if you're really negative about the process or fighting it every step of the way, especially with like a health phase, hormone stuff, and improving that, spending a good amount of time outside of a deficit before we get to it. If you're in that negative mindset, you're just not going to get as good of a result as if you are buying into it, fully committing to spending that time improving the things that need improved before getting into fat loss. And I think that that's something that it, like with looking, only looking forward to a fat loss phase, that's something where you're not going to maintain the results long-term anyway, sure. because it, you can't always be in a fat loss phase. And so if that's the only thing that gets you hyped up, then you're just going to have a rough time because you're going to either be trying to spend way too much time there throughout the year consistently or just not enjoying most of the year.
Right. Yeah. And that's no way to live. That's how people end up yo-yo dieting. So how would you go about improving this?
Improving the mindset? Looking at the positives of the other phases is a big one. Okay. So there are so many positives to being in a maintenance phase or a build phase. Like right now, I feel a little softer than I did in my fat loss phase. And if I were to only be focusing on that, I would be pretty frustrated about it. But I also feel amazing in my lifts. I'm eating so much more food. It's so much easier to fit in. Like if we want to go eat out to eat somewhere, or I'm just like making something out of the norm with my kids or something of that nature, like I can fit that in. Whereas in a fat loss phase, I'm mostly just going to stick to the same meals daily. So that expands the flexibility quite a bit. Like sleep, digestion are all really good. So there's so many benefits of not being in a fat loss phase, and it's way too easy to only focus on, am I getting smaller right now? Or am I seeing the scale go down? And then the other big one would be hiring a coach, because it's when you're in that headspace, it's really easy to get in your own way and continue dieting when that's the thing that hasn't been working for you.
Right. I think that's a very overlooked aspect. And again, we talk about it a ton, how many of, even when we're talking about body recomposition, like we mentioned in the first podcast, a lot of times this is at maintenance, right? Where we're more so focusing on building and you're seeing the recomposition there versus like hopping into a fat loss phase. And of course, like I can't recommend that enough as well. For most people, we do need to, if you've struggled to achieve the results you want on your own, most people just kind of continue to try to do the same thing and hope for a different result, where it oftentimes takes a drastically different approach. It takes an outside objective opinion. Anything else you want to add before we wrap this up?
I don't think so.
Okay, cool. Well, I think that was a great summary of kind of how to build a healthy, responsive body, how to make sure we have a good foundation in place. Next week, we will dig into how to optimize your nutrition for body recomposition. And again, really taking a deep dive there as far as things like, hey, what should our rate of loss look like if we are like doing a more fat loss focused body recomp? What should our macros look like, our nutrient timing and things of that nature? But as of now, that is all we have for you guys. If you want to apply to work with our team, just click the link in the show notes and we will catch you guys next time.